Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
This is a special edition of the Cinema Clash. This is what's opening in your local theater this Friday, this Saturday. This is our top five films each of the year. I do not know Hannah's list. She does not know my list. But I talk to Hannah a couple times every week all year. So I have kind of know what's on her list, and she kind of knows what's on my list. But I feel like I'm ready to fight.
I think so. And then we've got a bunch of honorable mentions and miscellaneous movies that I plan to throw out there just to annoy you.
And Hannah likes to do ties, which also annoys me.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Hannah, lead us off. The number five best movie of the year is...
It's a tie. And I'll tell you, in my five, I went back and forth so many times, and my list has changed 1,000 times in the past 2 weeks. And so I decided that my number five was going to be given the guilty pleasure slot. You know, the movies that I just had a heck of a lot of fun at this year. And I'm like, why not celebrate that?
This is going to hurt.
So my number five is the guilty pleasure tie between Girls Trip and Thor Ragnarok.
Sorry, I figured it'd be Girls Trip because I remember you really liked that. And it was a fun experience. In fact, I don't feel guilty about liking Girls Trip.
No, I don't feel guilty about it.
It's one of the best comedies of the year.
It is. And so I just feel that sometimes those fun movies just don't get the kind of recognition at the end of the year that they should. Because frankly, when you think about all the movies you've seen throughout the year, a lot of times the ones that stand out to you are the ones that you just enjoyed the most. And so I decided that I would reserve one spot in my top five and shove two in there.
And oddly enough, Thor Ragnarok is one of the stronger comedies mm-hmm. of the year, let alone action movies. And you usually do pick a Marvel movie or a Star Wars movie somewhere in your top films. I remember Civil War. No,
right.
Yeah, Civil War was really
Captain
high
mm-hmm.
on yours. And so you did it again with Thor. All right, that didn't hurt. That doesn't hurt at all.
Okay.
Yeah, Girls Trip was great. Thor Ragnarok was great.
That
doesn't hurt. Good
Yay.
On you.
So
good strong start.
Lay me on your number five.
I don't think you saw my number five.
Oh.
Good Time.
Oh, right.
Starring the year's best actor, in my opinion, Robert Pattinson.
From Twilight fame.
They both, a lot of people from Twilight this year, including Kristen Stewart, had great years, Kristen Stewart and Personal Charm. But I really liked Good Time. It takes place in one night, kind of one day, one night. And so after a heist goes awry, a bank robber tries to free his brother from Rikers Island all in one night. And it is frantic. It is gritty. It is not polished filmmaking at all. It is in your face. Very strong supporting actors. Jennifer Jason Leigh, Barkhab Abdi. You remember her from Captain Phillips? I am the captain now. It's directed by two brothers, Ben and Joshua Safdie. Ben Safdie actually plays Robert Pattinson's brother in this film. And it's so... What an unforgettable, strong film. And it's polarizing. A lot of people love this film, and a lot of people hate this film. I remember walking out of the theater, and some people were saying this is one of the worst movies they've ever seen in their lives.
And I suspect I might have fallen into that category, although I was intrigued by how much you really did appreciate Robert Pattinson's performance. So as someone who did watch all the Twilight films and am eager to see him sort of break out of that and see what else he can deliver, I sort of want to see this eventually. I have the screener, but I know that I probably would have been on that other side of the
polarizing.
Know.
You know, this really could go either way. I can see you hating it. But there is that sliver of chance where you walk out of this going, you know what? My eyes are open. Oh my gosh, I was blindsided.
Okay. Well, we'll see. If it makes it into any of the like award season nominations for like the Oscars, then I would have to see it. I know. I have a feeling it won't. But that actually reminded me, because when you talk about like a gritty heist movie, it reminded me that one thing that has fallen completely off my radar that I really enjoyed was Logan Lucky. And so I'm like, oh, you know what? What was that heist movie that I really liked?
Logan Lucky was very it was good. Yeah. It was good. It was nowhere near great. But like, and Robert Pattinson is just, you know, playing, I guess, playing the Channing Tatum character here.
Okay.
And it's a different kind of film altogether. Because Logan Lucky's funny. It's a comedy. This is not funny.
I know. This is not funny. I have a feeling I would not enjoy Good Times at all, but I'll put it on my list of things to attempt to see in the next 10 years.
Oh, you do. I really do. All right, Hannah, number four.
Number four, I think you'll actually appreciate. I think you'll
like. It's not a tie, is it?
It is another tie. It's my last tie. I promise this is my last tie of my top five, is my number four tie, which I chose these because I felt that they were both like really gripping good movies that came out earlier in the year and may have gotten lost in the mix, and both were based on real events. Wind River and Detroit.
Is Wind River based on a true story?
Remember, it was based on like real statistics. It was like based on the whole notion that on these Indian reservations, a lot of like the disappearance of young women. And
Those are two heavy films. Mm-hmm. Like Detroit is one of the heaviest. We're talking like Mudbound level, like heaviest films of the year. You walk in there, they're just punch in the gut.
Yeah.
Same with Wind River. You don't like heavy films.
I know.
And those are two good Lord heavy films.
And they came out early in the year. And so sometimes what happens is at the end of the year, when all these big movies are all coming out at once, some of those ones that you look back over what you had already seen, you go, you know what? These were probably just as good as any of this, any of these awards movies that are now coming out at the end of the year. So I wanted to give both of those their due so that people, if you hear about them or if you see them on your Netflix queue, give them a shot. Wind River with Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. And then Detroit was just like really gripping, powerful stuff, but is a little more on the violent side. It's a little harder to watch.
Now, Detroit became somewhat polarizing. It has a very strong woman director, Kathryn Bigelow. But some people thought, what is a white woman doing directing this very personal African-American story, this nightmare story from Detroit 1968? I'll never forget Will Poulter as that police officer.
The cop, yeah.
Ever. He is, good Lord. I mean, he even cried while doing some of those scenes. He said it was so... How could I be playing this character? Detroit is, that's a heavy film. I never want to see it again, in fact.
Which is why it's kind of funny that I have these two very light, funny movies as my number five tie, and then I have these two very heavy, gripping movies as my number four tie. But I promise you, I'm done with the ties.
Fair enough.
So what's your number four?
Dunkirk!
Of course.
We've seen three Churchill Dunkirk movies this year, or maybe more than three. So Churchill, Darkest Hour, Their Finest, and Dunkirk. And this one's actually really the only one set on the beach. And even then, a lot of times, it's not set on the beach. So Christopher Nolan does something very different. He takes everything in and surrounding the evacuation of 300,000 Allied troops off that beach, and he sets them in kind of different time periods. You have the guys on the beach who are there for about a week. You have the guys on the boat who are doing boat stuff for about like a day and a night. And then you have Tom Hardy in an airplane for about an hour. And they all kind of piecemeal run together. It's chaotic, it's fog, it's friction, you can't tell anybody apart, and it's it's fascinating. And you forget, you never, ever, ever once see a German.
No, that's true, and this one I found was visually really good, and I liked Christopher Nolan's cinematography and all of that.
70 millimeter,
but it's one where, I'm sorry, if you didn't see it already, if you missed it on the big screen.
Yeah, shame on you.
You can't watch this one on, you can't be watching it on your iPad or on the airplane. It's just not going to translate. I just, I appreciated it for the filmmaking, but I did not like this nonlinear storytelling.
Oh, I loved it. Oh, I loved it so much.
It confused the hell out of me. So this is another one that I think is very polarizing. I think a lot of people thought it was this brilliant masterpiece and loved it. And then other people kind of felt the way that I did, where they were just kind of confused by the story. If you didn't already know some of the story going in, if you see Darkest Hour before you see Dunkirk, you're going to understand Dunkirk a lot better. It helps to kind of know that that these civilian British ships were sent out to go and rescue troops, And that, if I had had that basis of knowledge of the story beforehand, I might have liked Dunkirk more. But if you are not a World War II history buff, this one's going to be a little harder to swallow.
You don't have to be a buff to understand what's going on here. They're surrounded. They need to get off the beach.
But again, you mentioned it too. You can't tell anyone apart.
No, you can't. That's, you know, welcome to wartime.
Oh, come on, though. You got to figure out who you're supposed to be rooting for.
I didn't know that was Harry Styles either.
I didn't either.
I couldn't even tell that was him.
It took a while, and then it just... there were a few. Mark Rylance, I think, you know, he was
my favorite actor in the film, even more than Kenneth Branagh, who's spouting Shakespeare over there on the pier. Mark Rylance as the boat captain is phenomenal.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And I railed.
He was good.
When the WAFCA Awards came out, or the nominations came out, that people considered Dunkirk a best ensemble. Like, no, it is not.
Yeah, it's hard to be best ensemble when 5 out of 10 people you can't even tell apart. So, anyway, moving on.
Hannah, number three.
Number three is Call Me By Your Name.
Ooh, strong one.
So Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer in this year. Basically, it's a lot of people are calling it, you know, this year's Moonlight because it's a gay romance. It's that forbidden romance type of story. But it's beautiful and it's beautifully shot. It's a great story. Timothée Chalamet should definitely be up there for Best Actor nominations. Armie Hammer, maybe for supporting actor. It's just a really powerful movie that isn't so much about a gay relationship, it's just this relationship. And so it's shot almost like it would be any other summer forbidden romance movie. And I just found it surprisingly captivating. And it really was probably my favorite movie from the Middleburg Film Festival.
Now, he's not one of my favorite actors of the year, but you mentioned Timothée Chalamet, this kid who came out of nowhere this year, and he's like in two or three pretty crazy films. He's definitely my breakthrough actor of the year. I really hope we see this kid. He's like last year's Lucas Hedges, remember him from Manchester by the Sea. This was written, actually adapted from a novel by James Ivory, very famous name, James Ivory. You remember him? Howard's End, Remains of the Day. I really liked the film. I didn't love it, but it's, you know, I can take 2.5 hours of my life to watch the Italian countryside, and I like the relationship, the dynamics between the two boys, and it has one of the most perfect endings of the year.
It's a very gripping story and very sweet, and it's just, it was a surprisingly good movie to me, and so those are always worth getting a little extra push at the end of the year for me, the ones that just kind of took me somewhere I didn't expect to go.
I think this will be nominated for Best Picture. I don't see it not being nominated. All right, my number three. It's already been mentioned. Wind River.
Okay.
Wind River, directed by first-time director Taylor Sheridan. But you know Taylor Sheridan's name because I love movies with a strong sense of place. And not only does Wind River have an obscenely strong sense of place, but it comes from Taylor Sheridan. Sicario. Hell or High Water, my favorite film from that year. Mm-hmm. When you think of those movies, you don't really think of the story first. You think of the place. And when you think of Wind River, I saw it so long ago, I don't think about the murder mystery or the FBI agent teaming with the Fish and Wildlife game tracker. I think of the place. I think of the Native American reservation covered in snow. Everyone's freezing to death. It turns very grisly towards the end, but that's really not the point of it. The point is, you know, this team between Elizabeth Olsen and Jeremy Renner tracking down what happened to this poor girl found in the middle of nowhere in the snow, murdered, and how that happened is so strong. Strong supporting cast again, Gil Birmingham as her father, Graham Greene as the local Native American police chief. I love Taylor Sheridan movies, whether he writes them, whether he directs them, I just never can shake them.
And it's surprising even for me because I remember I loved Hell or High Water and that was a huge surprise. And so I do agree with you that this was just one of those movies that sticks with you on a visceral level. You don't necessarily remember so much about the plot points, but I just remembered, and that's why it kind of rose back into my consciousness while I was putting my list together, was that it really, I do remember coming out of that film and just thinking, wow, that was a really interesting, powerful, well-done film.
And I'm surprised, because that's not a Hannah film.
I know.
It's not way too
dark. I'm telling you, you are just rubbing off on me.
You know, it's just too dark.
It's kind of frightening to think what my list might have been 3 years ago, pre-Charlie.
All right. The runner-up, Hannah, the number two, the runner-up second-best film of the year is...
Get Out.
Ah, very good. The Sunken Place.
And I wonder, I was like, this might be on Charlie's list too. Where would it fall? I do not know. But Get Out was shockingly good. And that's another one you had to go back several months and go, okay, what was on my list earlier in the year and what put it there? And Get Out, I forgot about it for a while. And then as award season kicked in and people started putting it back on their lists, I went back and read my review and I was like, wow, that's right. I really liked that movie. It is just so, you know, it's a horror comedy drama. I'm not even sure how you
It's a social satire. It's a racial satire. Mm-hmm. It's every pick a genre from comedy to horror.
Yeah.
And it fits this film. Jordan Peele, first time director Jordan Peele from Key and Peele. He's a comedy dude.
Mm-hmm.
Comes out of nowhere writing and directing really a phenomenal film.
Yeah. I mean, you know, white girl taking her black boyfriend home to meet the parents.
And really, I don't want to go past that.
No. And it just goes every which way and just takes you places you do not expect. And I just remember everyone coming out of that theater going, wow.
I remember the theater howling during the climax. The theater was rolling on the floor, howling, not laughing, just shocked, going, shocked. I cannot believe this is happening right now. And another breakout actor of the year, Daniel Kaluuya.
Yes, yes. Is it Allison Williams who plays the girlfriend?
She's one of the girls in, from Lena Dunham's Girls.
Right, and she does a phenomenal job, too, because her character, too, you just never know where it's going. And Bradley Whitford's in it.
Catherine Keener, Caleb Landry Jones.
Yeah, so just an all-around solid.
It's a knockout film. That's a good pick, Hannah. I already know what your number one is, because I already know.
Okay. And your number two?
My number two is Blade Runner 2049.
This is where we split.
takes place 30 years after the events of the first film, Blade Runner. You remember Harrison Ford in 1982? Mm-hmm. There's a new Blade Runner, Ryan Gosling, and he unearths a long-buried secret that has the potential really to plunge what is left of society into chaos. It's long. He spends a lot of it on a quest to find the original Blade Runner, Rick Deckard, played by Harrison Ford. Robin Wright shows up. Jared Leto shows up as a very creepy corporate guy. And I love the supporting females, especially the I don't know how much I can talk about the plot still, but it's just
in case.
What really makes it just gorgeous and the meticulousness of the detail, and it's directed by Denis Villeneuve, who we love. He did Arrival.
Yeah, I didn't love.
Well, you really liked Arrival.
I liked Arrival, but I did not love Arrival.
So this film just knocked me out of my seat, which is a really comfortable seat, by the way. It was best theater in town in Georgetown, with the whole Dolby 4D kind of thing going on. The reason you didn't like it as much is because you watched it on your little TV, and you didn't.
No, I watched it. No, that's not true. I watched it in my building's theater room, which did have like a 60-inch screen. So I saw it on a somewhat larger screen. I did not see it in your, upscale.
It's an
tremendous epic.
It is
theater.
The best of the sci-fi genre that you can get.
It took me way too many decades to actually see the first Blade Runner. So I had just watched the first Blade Runner just about a month before I saw the new one. And I just, I'm a Harrison Ford fan. I'm a Ryan Gosling fan.
Yeah, you're a Ryan Gosling fan.
So I that made it tolerable for me, but it's just not my thing. And I understand some people just love this movie, but I think the same people who love Dunkirk loved Blade Runner, therefore it's got two spots on
your list. I've already gotten you over to darker movies like Wind River. I'm gonna get you over to the Blade Runners next.
as long as you keep Ryan Gosling in there, maybe you have a shot.
All right, I'm pretty sure I know your number one movie of the year. What is it, Hannah?
It is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I don't know. That could be your number one, too.
TBD.
I don't know. TBD. I don't know. But that, again, this is sort of like Get Out. This was darkly funny. And it takes you everywhere. It is shocking. It is violent. It is funny. It is compassionate. It is bizarre. I mean, it just everything. And it's got every emotion imaginable. It's got an excellent cast with Frances McDormand, Sam Rockwell, Woody Harrelson. Just everybody delivers a phenomenal performance, great ensemble. And this one just had everything in it. And so when I had to pick like what had all the elements of a really great movie this year, this one kind of floated to the top.
No film moved me near as much as Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which is also why it is my number one film of the year. We tied. I think that's the first time that's ever happened.
Definitely.
Sam Rockwell is the best supporting actor of the year. Frances McDormand's my second, third place best actress just because there were some performances out there. But it's nothing against her. It's the best original screenplay of the year. Mm-hmm. It's so well written. Even a lot of it is in voiceover. About halfway through, something happens, and you get Woody Harrelson voiceover a lot. And that is for voiceover to be that powerful is something special. So, you know, 7 months after her daughter is raped and murdered and there are still no suspects, and she puts up three billboards to call attention to that fact, and it kind of rocks the town to its core. You know, it really doesn't sound like that strong of a premise, but man, the audience, you remember, I think we saw it at the same screening, clapped and cheered and was just overcome with emotion throughout the highs and lows of this
and
film.
And gasped.
They audibly gasped. Yeah. Like, that sounds like a cliche. He audibly gasped. It was frequent. And, Frances McDormand's just performance and her foul mouth is its own character in itself. What a strong, enjoyable, knock-you-out-of-your-seat film.
That's amazing. And for both of us to pick it as number one, it means that it's got to be pretty darn good and appeal to a lot of different people. It is R-rated.
You
so
are a mainstream chick.
Yeah.
I am not a mainstream guy. And we both picked the same film as number one. That tells the world something about that there's something special about this movie.
Mm-hmm. Means you should go see Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, even though it's got a title that I think is keeping some people away because they just don't really know what that means and what it's supposed to be about. But take our word for it. It's good.
It's sounding cliche on this episode. I'll never, ever forget it. And I never want to. Never want to forget this movie. All right, you're intriguing me. I made up my list of like five or six honorable mentions, but you came in over here and you're like, I have this list of honorable mentions. Not only is it going to set you off, but I did it in a weird manner. What are you talking about?
Well, because I was trying to categorize some of these things that deserve to be mentioned in some way because they stuck with me and were good movies this year. So my first one I call my wonderful.
I already know the two ones on here.
There's three rating going from PG to R. So you have Wonder with Jacob Tremblay, Julia Roberts, Owen Wilson. Great family film based on a book. Just sweet. Deserves to be seen. And it just conversation with kids. Just a really good, solid tearjerker, but with a very sweet tearjerker. Wonder Woman. Because I do think it was a solid outing, a great expression of girl power from Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman and director Patty Jenkins, who showed that a woman can direct one of these blockbuster superhero films.
Me.
Hey. And then the third one I threw into this Wonder list is Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Oh, I would have guessed wrong on that one. Yeah. Because you didn't see it. You didn't see Wonderstruck.
I did not see Wonderstruck, and I did not particularly like Wonder Wheel. So neither of those made it into my Wonder list. But I did put Professor Marston and the Wonder Women in there because nobody saw it. And it was fascinating. Bizarre, but fascinating. And it just was about the guy who created the Wonder Woman character. And it's worth looking at. It's just worth checking into and checking out. And so that's the first on my little like honorable mention list.
All right, here's my first on my honorable mention list. Movies are supposed to challenge you. They're supposed to give you empathy for people you just have nothing in common with. Like, Get Out. I have nothing in common with that. I have nothing in common with a 50-some-year-old female in Ebbing, Missouri. But man, did I identify with her. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I empathized and changed my entire opinion on Tanya Harding from I, Tanya. I remember Nancy Kerrigan versus I, Tanya. And of course, like the rest of the country, I was pro-Nancy Kerrigan. You know, a Disney princess, American wholesome family, gets clubbed in the knee by this thing from Portland, Oregon. And then I saw I, Tanya. And now I am convinced, and I will defend to the death, that Tonya Harding is truly America's sweetheart.
That is just so skewed. That is just wrong.
That's how powerful this movie was. Margot Robbie's performance. Allison Janney is my best supporting actress of the year as Tonya's mom, LaVonna. What a piece of work. And it's such a strong... You think you know this story? Like you covered it for the news. You think you know this story? You don't until you've seen I, Tonya.
No, it definitely changes your perspective of what happened in 1994. And I don't think I can call her America's sweetheart.
Tonya Harding.
That's just
and
flawed.
She's going to the Oscars, and I'm gonna cheer as loud as anybody.
I will cheer to see her on the red carpet, because we all know that she also was very well known for her style choices.
I can't
in 1994. Wait.
I can't wait. Tonya's getting a comeback.
I wouldn't go so far as to somehow give her just like this complete clean slate and elevate her to.
Hey, if Nancy wants to tell her side of the story, I will watch. Nancy.
Her story would be boring. We know her story would be boring, but I, Tonya was definitely a quirky one, so I'll give you that. But I America's sweetheart, I don't think
absolutely
so.
All right, give me another honorable mention.
Another honorable mention goes to the horror movie for people who don't like horror movies.
You hate horror movies.
It.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
so
that's a good one.
I don't particularly like horror movies, but I got behind It, and yeah. I enjoyed It.
Part
and
one, so, evidently,
yes.
Part one.
And so there will be another It, and I just, to me, it's something special. When and Get Out was on the horror spectrum,
ish.
But It definitely was one I was not particularly looking forward to watching, but I'm glad I did.
It had one of the hardest beginnings I've ever seen with the little boy in the yellow raincoat. It's one of three Stephen Kings this year. We saw, unfortunately, The Dark Tower, which stank.
Oh, I have a soft spot. I think it was too, I think people have been a little too harsh about that one. But
and I didn't see the third one, which was a Netflix release, Gerald's Game.
Yeah, I didn't see
but,
that.
But, you know, talk about child youth actor performances. All seven of them were outstanding. I liked Finn Wolfhard, you know, the real foul mouth kid, the best.
Yes.
But a lot of people like the girl the best. And yeah, it's strong. You know, and it's a remake. I've seen It before. I remember when it was a TNT miniseries, but this one just knocks it out of the park. And Bill Skarsgård as
Pennywise
will invade. Like, do not let young kids watch this movie. Like, they'll be traumatized.
Yeah, but it helps you be totally in on pop culture. I had no idea really what the red balloon and the yellow slicker and all that stuff really signified. And it makes the SNL skit that they played shortly after this all the more funny, where it's like they've got, I think it was Kellyanne Conway
yeah.
as sort of
we all float down
Pennywise.
Anderson.
We all float. Yeah. So definitely if you want to catch up on that one before the sequel comes out, it's a good one to catch.
All right, my next honorable mention. The best movie this year involving a current or former cast member from Saturday Night Live is Brigsby Bear. Kyle Mooney's Brigsby Bear, about a child who has a very sheltered life until his mid-20s when something happens and he comes into the real world, and really his only foundation is an old child's, I don't know, PBS television show starring Brigsby Bear. And it's how he attempts to, I don't know, accommodate to a new family. And, you know, his whole world is just thrust into chaos. Mark Hamill's in it.
Oh,
and
right.
It's just so sweet and tender. And I just loved everything about Brigsby Bear.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that one. It was cute. And I think that one had Greg Kinnear in it, too.
It did. He's
always got some really fun, he's really entertaining to watch in this one. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of those small movies that got lost and probably... I think a lot of children of the 80s, especially with the TV shows that they have on VHS tape and stuff. And
I'll go ahead and say it's the best film starring Mark Hamill this year.
Oh, that's harsh.
And no, and nothing against Star Wars The Last Jedi. Fine film. Very good film. But Brigsby Bear is actually better than The Last Jedi.
I put him sort of on par, which I think is also saying a lot. But hey, it shows some versatility for Mark Hamill. You got to give him that. I am going to go with my next category. I'm going to go with the best time watching a bad movie and a movie about the making of said bad movie.
Yeah, yeah.
The 1-2 punch that we had this year of seeing The Room followed by The Disaster Artist. Total terrible stuff to actually endure, but his hysterical nonetheless.
Best screening I've ever been to in my life is The Room, and it happened in 2017, about a movie released in 2003. And watching The Room was a much better experience than actually watching The Disaster Artist, a movie I didn't really care for. Please, if you have never been to a midnight screening of The Room, go.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I put it in the honorable mention. That was just a hoot. It was indeed the most fun screening because they handed out instructions and assorted props to utilize during the watching of this film. And if you go and see it with people who are in the know, who are fans, it makes it all the more fun. The Disaster Artist itself with James Franco is also just really good, and that's another one where, just like I, Tonya, where I'd like to see Margot Robbie walk down the red carpet with Tonya Harding, I absolutely want to see James Franco walk down the red carpet with Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy Wiseau, I hope he just gets a prominent interview somewhere, because he has just the best ego.
He's
like, you know what, I don't want to direct new Star Wars. I want to star in new Star Wars.
I will pay for my own movie and write a terrible script, and you will all watch it and honor me. So honestly, The Room and The Disaster Artist are just, for reasons that are totally inexplicable, are just a fun watch.
Honorable mention for the Eat Your Vegetables movie. Like, you don't really want to watch it, but you kind of have to, and it'll make you a better person. Is The Journey, about the Northern Ireland peace talks, because I just enjoyed Timothy Spall's performance so much. This was a while ago, and no one's probably heard of The Journey, but it is so... John Hurt, the late and great John Hurt, is in it as well.
That's the one where they're just sort of sitting in the car.
Yeah, it's a car ride movie, and then they get out of the car and talk some more. And it's a car ride journey about two intractable sides that'll never get along. But the heavy-hitting acting in this is just, it's a perfect Eat Your Vegetables movie.
Yeah, I actually forgot about that one, too. But it was very good, and certainly for anyone who, personally, for all these political dramas that are constantly coming out, that one was definitely one of the most absorbing to watch, but very dialogue-driven. And it definitely an Eat Your Vegetables movie. I agree. I'm going to just do a quick mention of the action movie with an awesome soundtrack that's too violent for some, but has amazing editing and I like because Ansel Elgort is just too cute. And that is Baby Driver. And I'll tell you, I watched Baby Driver again last night with some friends of mine. They did not like it.
Well, then you need new friends. You need new friends, Hannah.
So one of them was Eileen, who you know very well. She thought it was okay. She thought it was just a decent action movie. And I'm like, no, there's so much more to this than that. And then two other people just really thought it was too violent for what they were expecting. And I'm like, nah, I don't think so.
What Edgar Wright achieved in editing and the little quick, I don't know, Easter eggs and red herrings and perfect synchronization between the action and the music is, I've never seen it done before. It's the first time I've ever seen it. It's so original. And the movie does technically fall off a cliff in the second half. The first half is just so much stronger. The man of, I guess we cannot say his name, Kevin Spacey, is in it. But I fell in love with Lily James.
Yes,
she was one of my best supporting actresses from this film. She's in three films this year, Darkest Hour, this, and... what was it? The Exception with Christopher Plummer. He was Kaiser Wilhelm. Lily James, man, right on the map. Another breakthrough actress this year, and this was her best performance.
Yeah, and music was its own character in Baby Driver, absolutely. And so typically not my genre, but for all the reasons I mentioned, and for Ansel Elgort, who people will remember from The Fault in Your Stars, he just, I think he's perfect as this kid baby who's this getaway driver. And it just took some twists and turns, literally and figuratively, that just made it, to me, a really fun watch. And so I really liked it, but other people have not so much.
Well, it's going to win Best Editing at the Oscars this year. Like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
My final honorable mention is actually a tie, because I wanted to call the attention to two overlooked documentaries. There are the documentaries that everyone's already knows about this year, like Jane and Faces Places, which we've talked before. But I want to talk about two. The Farthest, which is about the Voyager 1, Voyager 2 spacecraft, which was my favorite AFI docs one. It's really just probably the most mind-expanding when you think about how far out human spacecraft are now from our solar system. It's really just blows your mind about what humans, how far we've gone now. And Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press, which is kind of a warning, the dangers that journalism and reporting are in nowadays in 2017. It's kind of focuses on that whole Hulk Hogan Gawker trial that went down in favor of Hulk Hogan and shut down Gawker, and the consequences, the second and third order effects of that, and how a society, freedom of the press is in trouble. It's on Netflix. Take a chance. Go watch it.
So when you're done watching The Post with Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks, you should actually go watch the
documentary. Somewhat of a documentary itself is The Post. But if you want to see a real nonfiction, you know, documentary, more contemporary, nothing wrong with The Post. Love The Post. Mm-hmm. But Nobody Speak is eye-opening.
Great. And so I'm just going to throw out there just a few of my just the quickies that came out recently and are just very good that I did like. Lady Bird, The Shape of Water, and actually going back a little bit, The Big Sick was definitely also one of my top 25 of the year. So it's really hard to do these lists because there's a lot that I just kind of think are of equal value.
You have to make choices make a list like this.
I know, and that's why I only had two ties in my top five.
Shape of Water would make my top 10. Mm-hmm. I really love, that's my best actor of the year, Sally Hawkins. Guillermo del Toro does another outstanding adult fairy tale. I love that 1962 setting. Shape of Water was, out of those three you just mentioned, it just is outstanding.
Well, and I did just watch Maudie, finally, which had Sally Hawkins in it as well. And so she had a killer year. Absolutely. She is great in Maudie as an artist with some sort of severe arthritis who lives out in the middle of nowhere and ends up just kind of making a name for herself as an artist based on a true story. And Sally Hawkins is just, she's phenomenal in that. And then she's phenomenal in Shape of Water as a mute.
Yeah.
Who falls My in best love actress with a
has
sea
zero
creature.
Lines of dialogue. She acts with her eyes and body.
Yeah.
And it's, remember when the artist, that both of them were nominated. In fact, I think he won, Jean Dujardin, won mm-hmm. for The Artist, that silent movie.
Yeah.
Here's another silent performance that she's at least going to get a nomination.
Yeah. So it's tough to do these lists. There's so many more things that we'll kind of keep thinking about as the day wears on. I'm sure I'll realize that there were tons of movies that I meant to put on my list, but it's very subjective. And I think the fact that we actually had two of the same films,
we overlapped twice, and our number one was the same.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, we're supposed to argue, so I hope that actually never happens again. But I'm happy it did.
Yeah, once every 3 or 4 years, it's okay.
Like a comet.
That's right.
All right. Well, that is 2017 recapped, reorganized, and ranked and stacked up. So let us know. Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? Are we on base? Are we way off base? What's going on here? And who did better?
We'll see you back here for the Oscars.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.